From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of August, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson at TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing here in Champaign County. We'll take up the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and I'll bring you up to speed on some of the agricultural news for the afternoon. A quick reminder that you can hear our programs anytime you'd like, in a couple of different ways. First, by visiting our website at willag.org, willag.org. Just click and play the program on demand, online, anytime you'd like. Or you can hit that podcast tab where you'll find a way to subscribe to the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and even the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Just hit subscribe in each of the players and you'll be presented with a series of opportunities. Or you can search each of them out in your favorite podcast application. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day settled at $3.65 and a quarter, down two. December two lower at $3.90 and three quarters. And the March at $4.09 and three quarters, down a penny and three quarters. September soybeans nine lower for the day. November 9.5 lower. They finished at $9.77 and the January at $9.94 and a half, down 9 cents. Bean meal and futures down $6.50 for the afternoon. Bean oil up 65 cents. Soft red winter wheat in the December 6 higher at 541 and a half, and the hard red December at 555 and three quarters, up 9 cents. Live cattle futures 77 and a half cents lower on the afternoon for 100 pounds. Feeder cattle up 20 cents, and the lean hogs for the day were 40 cents lower. They finished at $81.67 and a half cents. The wholesale price of gasoline today down 2 9/10 cents at $2.06 and 7 cents. Greg Johnson is with TGM and joins us now to talk about what's been happening in the marketplace. Hi, Greg. How are things at Total Grain Marketing and the elevator there in Champaign County today?
Well, today we're doing two things. We're, number one, getting ready for fall harvest, which I think is still 3 weeks away here in our area. But, you know, it's been moving or starting down south, and it's moving up into the Kentucky, Tennessee area. So it's just a matter of weeks before it starts up here. So that's one thing we're getting ready for. And then the second thing, farmers with basis contracts and DP on old crop corn and beans have to make a decision whether they want to price that or roll it onto a deferred month. And so that's occupying a fair amount of our time because there's a little bit more grain left over this year compared to most years. So those are the two things that are occupying most of the time right now.
Have you been taking trucks in regularly then?
Yes. Yeah. There was more out there than, you know, considering it's the end of August. Usually most of the grain is moved, but, you know, with the price dropping all year, farmers were waiting for a rally that just never materialized. And so here we are at the lower levels.
So I'll ask a follow-up question because I'm wondering what you're doing with that grain at this point. Are you putting it on the ground? Are you putting it in storage in the bin? Do you have a train ready to go? What's happening with it?
Export demand, while it's picking up a little bit on corn, still isn't great, and bean export demand is way behind normal. China has bought a few vessels as of late, but by my count, they're only up to 50, 55 million bushels, and that's a drop in the bucket compared to what they bought last year. So, no, the train market in the fall at this point is not the answer. If you sell trains, you're basically giving them away. You're not making any money because the bids are so low. You know, cattle can only eat so much corn in October, and they don't want it all in October. So the market is incentivizing farmers and elevators to store that crop until next winter when they'll need some of that. So trains are not the answer at this point. So it's basically going to be find storage space for it. And in our situation, that's going to be putting corn on the ground.
How much are you expecting to have on the ground? What have you had recently? And what kind of capacity do you have?
We theoretically can put 4 million bushels on the ground. We've done that in the past. Last year, we only had 1 million bushels on the ground. The year before, we didn't have any. So this year, it's probably going to be somewhere between 2 and 3 million bushels, I would guess. So it's going to be more than in the past, not a record amount, but certainly enough that you know, we'll keep that much, that many bushels off the market. But you know, when we look at it, there's still 2 million bushels of old crop corn that farmers haven't sold yet. So basically that extra 2 million bushels that we're going to put on the ground compared to last year is basically just going to account for the old crop that didn't get sold and didn't get moved. So we you know, if the crop was a normal crop this year, we'd be in the same boat basically as we were last year. We would be able to handle everything. The problem is this year's crop is probably 10% bigger than last year in our area. So we'll have an extra 10% to figure out, have to find a home for. And I don't know that we have the answer yet, but we've got a little bit of time to figure out that problem.
Is the corn coming in good condition, and does it help or hurt your ability to maintain condition of the crop?
The quality has been very good. Last year's quality, if you remember, was very good. A lot of 60-pound test weight corn, and it's a lot easier to store 60-pound test weight corn than it is 55 or 56, for example. So the quality started out really good, and for the most part, if farmers kept an eye on it, ran some fans, they kept it in good shape. So the quality isn't the concern. It's just the sheer quantity is the problem.
What do you see in the soybean market at this time?
Soybean demand is not good. So the market is paying, you know, 45 cents to store beans till March, almost 60 cents to store till July. So I think that's what most commercial elevators and farmers that have storage are going to do. They're going to respond to market signals, and the market is saying, we don't need it all in the fall. We'll take some in February, March. We'll take some more in the spring. We'll take some more in the summer. But we don't need it all in October, November. So the market is sending that signal, and it's up to the market and to the commercials and farmers to respond to that and figure out a way to store it until the market wants it.
What are you suggesting to producers when they call?
It depends on how much they've got sold. Hopefully they've got 20-25% sold. Some have more, some have less, but I'd say on average we probably got 20-25% of the new crop sold. You know, I really do think we're going to go lower before we go higher, but we're probably getting closer every day to a low. So I think it will pay to hold on to the crop. May not be a big winner, but you know, the funds are still short, and at some point they will cover their short position, and we should see a pretty good bounce. But if we go down 25 cents and then bounce 50 when the funds cover, that's kind of my expectation, is we go down another 20-25 cents and then bounce 50 post-harvest. So I think it will pay to hold on to the crop, but the DP charges are probably going to be 25 cents. The basis contracts are 25 cents wider than what they will be in January, February, and a call option is about 25-30 cents at the money. So, you know, the market's got it figured out. The farmer is not going to get something for nothing. They're going to have to pay on any of those strategies. So the bottom line is the futures market has to go higher. December corn has been hanging around $4. It's, you know, plus or minus 10 cents. If it doesn't go much higher than $4, all those strategies probably aren't going to pay out a lot. You know, you'll give it up in the DP charges, you'll give it up in the basis, or you'll give it up with the 30 cent option premium that you paid. So December corn needs to go higher than $4 in order for those holding strategies to work. March corn's 420, so March corn would have to go up by more, you know, more than where it is today at 420. So, you know, the market has to go up in order for farmers to get rewarded to store the crop. I think it could to some extent, but number one, it may go lower before it goes higher, and number two, it may only be a small gain. 20-25 cents.
I checked with Eric Snodgrass last night just because I was thinking about the hot weather we've had and wanted to know where this summer landed. He'll have that information for us tomorrow when we talk to him during the closing market report. But it appears this is one of the coolest summers on record out of 132 years. We'll find out how cool. However, we've had some really warm days here, hot even. Today, I think we got lucky, at least to this point in the day. Do you think that's done much damage at all to a crop that's, for corn, pretty much already complete, I think? And soybeans still feel like they're in a good shape too.
Yeah, I think soybeans are in definitely good shape. a lot of those beans get planted first anymore prior to the corn even getting planted. As far as corn is concerned, the corn that got planted in April, roughly 25%, that's obviously in good shape. The corn that got planted first half of May, another 25%, probably in okay, in good shape. The corn that got planted in the last half of May, probably we've lost a few bushels just because of the later planting date, but I think it will beat maturity. It'll get to maturity before we run out of time. It's the 25% of corn that got planted in June and that was replanted. That's the one that, surprisingly, when I talk to farmers, they're very well okay with this 95 degree weather. Even if we wouldn't have gotten the rain, they really want to see the warmer temperatures speed up the maturity of the crop. They're concerned that the late planted corn may not beat frost early or normal frost date. So there's still some uncertainty on that last 25% of the crop, I would say.
On that note, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGN. That's Total Grain Marketing, part of the Elevator System, located right here in Champaign County, Illinois, for his elevator. He joins us each and every Wednesday here on the Closing Market Report, which comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's online on demand at willag.org, willag.org, or you can search it out in your favorite podcast application. You can also just subscribe to the Closing Market Report Commodity Week and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast as well. Off that willag.org website, hit the subscribe button in each of the players. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. In today's agricultural news, we'll start in Washington, D.C., where the House GOP farm bill may cost more than it was funded at, but one longtime ag lawmaker says that should not be a showstopper. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley agrees that the Congressional Budget Office farm bill's final score of $33 billion over budget is a problem. When CBO speaks, Grassley says lawmakers listen. Now, Grassley and other Senate and House Ag Republicans argue farmers need more farm in the farm bill. The House committee passed bill includes more funding for farm safety net programs, including reference price supports.
So if prices are above the reference prices, most of this money isn't going to be spent.
This leads Grassley to his split-screen view of the CBO farm bill estimate, saying it makes very difficult to get a bill passed, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee that the money is going to be spent. Republicans argue passing a new farm bill would help by giving greater certainty to producers and their lenders. Funding differences stalled talks in the Senate, and logistical problems in the House over government spending bills have threatened to force another extension of the long outdated 2018 farm bill. Let's stay Washington-focused, but come back here to the Farm Doc Daily team, where the latest results released from the Gardner Food and Agricultural Policy Survey at the University of Illinois on the question of whether consumers and voters believe those in political power can address high food prices has come in. Farm Doc Daily from the U of I says concerns about the cost of food remain a priority for consumers and voters, and the recent emphasis on food prices by both presidential candidates demonstrates the issue's continued relevance. The U of I ag economist found most respondents thought that the political parties could help lower food prices and grocery bills. Not surprisingly, most of the respondents, who identified with just one of the major parties, thought that only their party would be successful in lowering prices. Those who identified as independent or aligned with a third party, however, were less confident politicians could help lower food prices. The results of the survey underscore that consumers do believe politicians can help lower the cost of food, but the who can is highly partisan. And finally today, cash rents have set a new record high again in Illinois. Farmers in Illinois are paying record high cash rents again this year. USDA's annual cash rent survey puts the state average at $269 per acre for non-irrigated cropland. That's in this current year. It is the third consecutive record-breaking year. A new record high was established in 2022 after a seven-year slump. Last year, the 2022 statewide average cash rent was bested by $16 an acre, and this year, despite ideas it might stay steady or decline, the price rose another $10. Illinois has some of the highest countywide cash rent averages in the Midwest, but not the highest statewide. Iowa farmers pay, on average, according to the USDA cash rent survey, $276 an acre. Illinois, again, is at $269. However, 10 Illinois counties have higher average cash rents above Iowa's highest countywide rate of $323. That's in Sioux County in the northwestern part of Iowa. At least 10 Illinois counties spread eastward from the state's capital in Springfield have higher published rates, led by Piatt at $377 an acre. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thank you for being with us today. I think we have quite a little bit to discuss for the day. Can we talk first about the very high temperatures across the Corn Belt, the rainfall that came yesterday in parts of the Corn Belt and today, too? Can you put all of that in context for me, please?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, from a human perspective, it's ugly out there. You know, the high temperatures and the humidity this week has just been oppressive, as they say. But, you know, it's been good. We've had a lot of chilly weather here recently, and so that was really helpful in speeding along some crop development. But it also accelerated drying. In the Midwest, before these showers and thunderstorms occurred over these last couple of days, the topsoil did firm up in most areas, becoming short across a big part of the Midwest. Well, short topsoil moisture is totally irrelevant at this time of the year. It's all about the subsoil moisture. And the subsoil moisture profile continues to be at adequate levels for the majority of the region. Now, I know there are pockets out there, especially in Ohio and a few in southern Illinois, and certainly the Delta, you know, they're hurting for moisture. So I don't want to make it sound like it's all peaches and cream. That's not the case. But in general, for where we are in the month of August and where we ought to be in the month of August, we're still doing pretty darn good. And the rain that did come along here in the last couple of days has been quite erratic. There definitely have been some pockets of impressive rainfall, some 1 to 1.6 inch amounts occurring in the interior of northeast and east central parts of Illinois. We saw amounts in parts of Missouri. I think there was a couple of locations that had 2 to 3 inches. Kirksville, I think, had 3.11. That was the greatest rain that I had seen. There were a couple of other areas that had some 1 to 2 inch amounts. So, but a lot of the precipitation hasn't been that great, you know, running a couple tenths to three quarters of an inch. And with temperatures in the 90s, that's not really going to do much, but it's always helpful to take the icing off at the top a little bit here. Now, we are finishing out with the warm weather. Tomorrow, the afternoon temperatures will be similar to today. We'll be in the 80s and lower to middle 90s. The warmest weather will be in that Ohio River Valley area back into the lower Missouri. And so today and tomorrow will be pretty nasty in those areas. And it looks like we may get one more day east of the Mississippi River in that Ohio River Basin area that we'll see temperatures pretty high into the 90s. But it will be cooling off in the Missouri River Valley tomorrow, or actually as we go into Friday. And as we move forward through the weekend, we will see cooler temperatures push through the Midwest. We'll be back in the 70s and 80s for Sunday and Monday. Goodness, we may have a few upper 60s in the upper Midwest. So from a crop perspective, you know, the warm weather we've been having is probably necessary. And will help us to get these crops a little bit closer to the finish line before we do start getting into some of that chillier weather.
And the boaters would like to have a better Labor Day weekend. I suppose that may be confined to the places that have most of the lakes. It sounds like that they'll be cold. Maybe they would prefer to have a little warmer weather as well. But it sounds like it'd be a pretty good Labor Day weekend. What happens then for the rest of next week?
Yeah, the rest of next week, we should be in a bit of a drier mode. We have one frontal system that will cut through the region next week, and we will expect it to bring a little line of showers and thunderstorms. But all the active weather is going to be on the Gulf Coast states for a while next week. So it's going to be limited moisture for the Midwest. So when the front comes through, it's really not going to bring much moisture. The temperatures will be milder, obviously. And so we'll be able to conserve that subsoil moisture with the temperatures in the 70s and 80s in the second half of the week. But I really don't expect a lot of rain. So as we go forward through the work week next week, I would say we'll probably pick up maybe a couple tenths to three quarters of an inch with a couple of pockets that might get an inch or so. But I really wouldn't get too caught up with higher amounts for right now. So it'll be a good environment for maturation and farming activity in general. But we're not going to do much to bolster the moisture profile in a big manner.
What has La Nina been up to at this point? It's slow to develop still?
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting to see the NOAA forecast model that they use, that CFS version 2, whatever it is. That model has just been consistently anxious for La Nina since last January. It's been always saying that, you know, we're 2 months away from La Nina, and that every time we get close to that point, it pushes the start of the event back further. You know, when I look at the ocean temperatures out there in the Pacific, I do not see support for a significant La Nina event. And I think the Australian Bureau of Meteorology has the right idea. They have been poo-pooing the La Nina event for months, and I think that they're correct. I think that there is a chance we'll see La Nina-like conditions evolve as we finish out the year, probably the fourth quarter. And what I mean by that is we may not fully qualify a La Nina event, but the ocean temperatures may get just a little bit cooler biased. And so we won't be able to develop the traditional La Nina influences that we usually see worldwide with a normal event. And for that reason, I urge a lot of caution for folks that are hoping that La Nina will come along and mess up the outlook for Brazil this year, because I think that this event is going to be such a wimpy event, if it occurs at all, that Brazil's weather is going to be a lot closer to normal than what I think a lot of folks may be anticipating. Now, with that said, I do think that the second half of September will be a little bit light on precipitation. Some years we can get started in fields as early as the second half of September because scattered showers have started. And I think that we may see a few showers, but I don't think it's going to be real substantial. And the marketplace will get excited about that. But I think when we get into October, it'll be a different ballgame, and we will see the rains occurring a little bit more frequently and supportive of that early soybean crop. So that's kind of my expectation, and I do base a lot of that on the La Nina, or the lack of La Nina in this case.
Hey, thank you much, and we'll talk with you again next week.
You bet. Have a good one.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world right here from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.